Good morning. Welcome to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldin, and this week I have the pleasure of having Brooke Dooling here. She grew up in Astoria and went away to the East and got a degree in environmental studies and came back and now has a great business growing and harvesting wild plants for medicines. Her business is called Love Warrior Gardens. Good morning, Brooke.
Good morning.
And so, how did you get interested in using plants as medicine?
Well, it started with being really sick. I was really sick growing up in Astoria. Through high school, I had chronic sinus infections. And it took a long time to even realize that I didn't have allergies. I took a lot of different allergy medications, and then they realized I had sinus infections, and I went through several courses of antibiotics and went off to college. I got sinus surgery before college, which is the most extreme thing they can do for chronic sinusitis, and that didn't help. I got the worst sinus infection of my life my freshman year of college, and at that point, they gave me the strongest antibiotics they had on the market, and I took them for a month along with prednisone, and when that didn't work, I realized I was screwed. My immune system crashed, and I was pretty hopeless and thinking about dropping out of college because I was sick all the time. But at that point, my dad had a friend who's a Native American naturopath who just happens to be a friend of his, and he said she recommended a certain herb formula and some dietary changes, cutting out wheat and dairy and sugar and alcohol.
No way. the usual suspects.
Yeah.
To give your system a break.
Yeah, but taking a combination of these four plants, Echinacea, Eyebright, Osha, and one other. Anyways, a combination of these four plants was stronger than any antibiotics that I'd taken from Western medicine, and I was able to kill my sinus infection and use that to eventually heal my immune system. And so that was just kind of my background. I knew that herbs worked, and I hadn't really thought too much more about it until after college. I was working as a farmer around Sauvie Island area. And I was going through some depression, and I found myself, whenever I was depressed, I would be running into the woods, and the forest was such a healing place for me. And I noticed that, like, working in the farm was very taxing and taking a lot out of my body, and going to the forest where plants just grew themselves and were there and ready just felt so good to me. And I started becoming curious about how you could use those wild plants and those native plants. And so I signed up for a course called the Elderberry School of Botanical Medicine, just looking to learn about plants. And it ended up being a huge healing process and a huge finding of my passion and finding a lot out about plants and finding that herbalism is much more than just about medicinally treating things with the scientific properties of plants, but a whole spiritual path.
And so now you are an herbalist. What does that mean?
As an herbalist, it means that I work with medicinal plants. Mm-hmm. I work with herbs, and so that works in different ways. I make tinctures, which are a really easy way to take plants internally. It's an alcohol extract generally, and then I also will infuse vinegars and honey syrups, and make teas. And these are all nice ways that we can take plants internally and use them kind of the way we're used to using, well, not really the way we're used to using Western medicine, but in the fact that you take something internally that has a certain property that is healing in a certain way, and it can affect your physical well-being. And then there's this other side to herbalism that I didn't know about, which is that most herbalists work with plants on a spiritual level in some way. They're in love with plants and love being in the woods, and it's just this secret job that no one ever told me about when you're growing up. You know, I always knew I wanted to be in the forest and wanted to be outside all day, so I assumed that I would be an environmental scientist. But then in college, science wasn't the way I wanted to look at nature. I was in a geology course, and we went out to the forest, and it was so beautiful, and we'd say be measuring the rocks and figuring out why they looked this way, and I'd just be standing back like, they're so beautiful, it's so magical. And herbalism is really a way of working with that part of nature that you know as a child, the love of nature and the magical side of nature. And then it's also very practical on a physical level as well.
Practical in terms of healing properties?
Yeah, like you have a stomach ache, I can like ask you what kind of stomach ache and figure out the best stomach ache herb I can give you, because mm-hmm. it has, you know, these certain properties that will produce bile in your system that will then help you to better digest foods or help you process fats better. And so they have, you know, there are naturopaths who scientifically are trained to look at plants and their scientific constituents, and they can break it down and tell you which plants have which constituents and how those relate to Western medicine, because most Western medicines are based on plant constituents. And so it's a way of working with plants in that way. They work that way. That's not the way I know how to work with plants, but that's a very useful way of working with mm-hmm. herbs.
So then the difference would be, it's similar to what you might get at a naturopath's office, which is an herbal formulation, but coming about it in a slightly different way.
Yeah, it's just a different path of finding the answer. And it's pretty awesome that it works this way. Like, I can work with someone who's naturopath, and we can work with someone who has a certain problem and come up with a formula with them for them, and we'll come up with similar formulas or even the exact same remedy. And I came about it by talking to this person about their mother or their relationship problems, or like looking at the kind of pallor they have. And mm-hmm. so it's just a different,
instead of the detailed history of your whole health and your parents.
Yeah, instead of running a blood test or
mm-hmm,
something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's interesting to come to the same place. It's interesting. In 1971, I was living in Berkeley, California, and I had a boyfriend named Mo. And Mo was constantly running away to the forest and wildcrafting herbs and putting together formulations. And it always annoyed me because he would take off and I would miss him. And then he'd come back and he would sell some stuff here and he could do some orders there. And then I moved on and moved away, and he moved to the Southwest and started a company, Celestial Seasonings. And that came from just running around in the woods. And, you know, when people think, well, herbs really don't, you know, they don't do anything, you know. If you drink sleepy time tea and you get sleepy, that is a pharmacological effect. It's a powerful effect. And if you're also taking sleeping pills, it might be too much, you know. So plants have powerful physiologic effects and need to be taken seriously, not just brush off as, oh, yeah, I'm just having some peppermint tea.
Yeah, definitely. There are interactions definitely with different compounds or medical things that people might be taking or doing. And
right.
definitely it's important to know about those things. And so I'm always educating myself when I'm working with someone
right.
on those things. And it's important. I'm And it's important to know how powerful plants are. And I think people are often surprised. I did a community-supported herbalism last year. So it was like a CSA for herbs where people could sign up and they get herbs each week. And I do intake with different people to find out why they were doing it and what they needed. And I saw a lot of people be really surprised when they were having results that worked. So it was very exciting.
That is exciting. Yeah, there are so many ways to get there. And if people are using herbs for medicinal purposes, that is on purpose, you know, either getting a formulation from someone or buying them, and they're working with any kind of a doctor, they need to coordinate. So, you know, you don't withhold that from your other doctors. You need to let everyone know. When I went to have chemo, I brought my herbal formula for building my white blood cells in. And I said, is this okay? Now, I don't know that they knew what astragalus was or knew what whatever these, I mean, this, some of the stuff is pretty obvious, ginger and mints and whatever. But I think it was really important to just show them, you know, I'm also taking this every day. And I'm hoping to keep my white blood cell count up.
Yeah, that's great. And it's important because a lot of herbs that are working on the same thing as the regular medication you're taking can amplify the effects. So,
and that might be toxic.
Yeah. A lot of people on blood thinners, for example, will take something herbally that's going to support their heart. And it might make your blood thinners work better, meaning that's great. You could reduce your dose potentially, but you don't want thin blood. So
right. Then you'll be bruising all over the place. So let's talk about, do you teach people how to do tinctures and infusions?
I've taught a few people. Uh-huh. I did a class at Farmstock on tincture making class. And I will definitely be teaching more in the future. I'm just still figuring out what's going to be the best venue for me. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have been interested in wildcrafting classes. And that's something that I've been really careful about showing people, just because you really have to know your plants before you collect them. And you also really have to know where you're collecting. And
well, and if everyone is going after the same plants, they'll disappear.
Right. That's really the thing that I'm worried about. And especially, I have my own spots around here. I don't want to take everyone to my spot, because then they can't support.
It's like the mushroom farmer.
Yeah.
Picker. They don't want to take you to their prime spot for whatever the mushroom is that they pick, because then it's gone.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a little different in that a lot of these wild plants are more bountiful year round and easier to find, some of them, but I still just really want to be careful about over harvest.
I think it's a real problem. I mean, it's kind of a problem with everything in the wild. If everyone goes out and wants the same thing, then there's none left.
Right.
And damn, I want mine.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to get the last fish out there.
Yeah.
So let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more, and you're going to give us some wonderful singing. If you have a question that you want to put to Brooke, or you want to weigh in with a comment, give us a call here at 503-325-0010. You're listening to Your Health, and we'll be right back. Well, that was a little trip to Cuba. You are listening to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldine, and I'm with local herbalist Brooke Dooling. So how do you work with plants?
Well, I work with them in a medicinal way by just creating formulas that are easy for people to take, making tinctures, infused vinegars, honey syrups, salves, oils, teas, and I also do some pestos.
Okay, now I'm seized on salves. I want to know about salves.
Okay. So a salve is an infused oil. So I take extra virgin olive oil, organic, of course, and infuse it with dried herbs. And then from that oil, I can add in beeswax, and it makes like a thicker topical solution that holds on longer than the oil.
Wait, now, so do you just soak it in at room temperature? Do you cook it?
It's heated a little bit.
Just
so
a little. Okay.
The ideal is to be at 100 degrees for like a couple hours, or to be at maybe 80 degrees for a couple weeks.
Got it.
And
okay.
So
you want to get all the active compounds out of the plant and into the oil.
Yes.
And then you strain it out?
Yeah, you strain it out and...
And you mix in the beeswax and then it gets hard.
Yeah, and then you add beeswax mm-hmm. while it's heated and mm-hmm. stir it in. And I think it's about 1 ounce of beeswax per cup of oil is about what you add.
Okay, so not tons.
No, not tons. Mm-hmm. But I may be very wrong on that proportion.
Oh,
so
okay.
Maybe don't quote me.
Okay,
so now
a salve would be for something on your skin. So like what?
So like a rash or a fungal infection. I do a lot of stuff that's good for feet, or a cut, an open cut, or a sore, or a burn.
So if you had a little skin infection, a burn. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And so then you make a salve based on whatever the problem is.
Yeah.
A fungus is not going to have the same thing as a burn or a cut.
Right. And so I do like a couple kind of standard formulas. So I'll make like a burn salve and the burn salve is generally good for cuts too. Or I'll make a sore muscle salve
Might have comfrey in it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or comfrey, I would put in one that was like, it's really cell proliferative, so it helps the cells grow faster. So I'd put it in one for cuts, but I'd be sure and put some antiseptic things in there too, because comfrey can heal wounds so fast that they can close over and be lock in infection. So you have to be really careful with comfrey.
Mm-hmm.
So I use comfrey for tendons and bone injuries a lot.
Right. Okay. That sounds good. Okay. So that would be a salve. And then tincture. How do you do a tincture?
A tincture is an alcohol infusion, or you could tincture something in vinegar or glycerin. But generally, alcohol is a great way to do it because alcohol is a great preservative too. So tinctures can last for 10 years or so.
I found some valerian that we made many years ago. It seemed the same. I mean, it didn't seem degraded at all.
Yeah.
At least 15 years ago.
It's amazing. So a tincture, you very basically chop up an herb in a mason jar and pour alcohol over it.
What do you use? Like vodka?
You can use vodka. I usually use Everclear because the stronger alcohol can pull out more constituents, mm-hmm. especially with oily and resinous plants. With some of the like softer plants, like leaves or something like that, that aren't oily. I'm trying to think of what one I would, maybe dandelion. A lot of the liver tonics, I'd use a less strong alcohol.
And give an example of some resinous plants.
Well, resinous plant that I use from Southern Oregon is Yerba Santa. Mm-hmm. Another resinous plant would be lavender or a lot of essential oils. Anything that smells a lot has a lot of essential oils. So like red cedar or juniper.
Cinnamon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm, that sounds yummy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you soak it for
2 weeks or more, and then strain off, squeeze out as much as you can using like a nut straining sack or just like cheesecloth.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can filter it again after that. Or you can just use it like that and put it in a dropper bottle or however. But it's pretty simple to make a basic tincture. And it can get more complex too. Like I follow certain formulas that allow me to have reproducible results.
You know, one thing with plants and herbalism is there's a very, very long history passing down from person to person in different areas. These are the plants here that have these properties. And most Western people, you know, have lost that. But there's some basic things. Most people know that they can use a mint for calming their stomach or chamomile to relax. I mean, there's a certain amount of it left that a lot of people are familiar with.
Yeah.
And then what you're doing is expanding it out to the original and beyond, you know, even to what we have learned in modern times of the properties, which of course it was known on the intuitive level, not on the scientific level.
Yes. And so that's another way that I learn about plants. I read a lot in books, but the schools that I studied at, the Elderberry School of Botanical Medicine and then the School of Forest Medicine, teach us to learn about plants from the plants directly. And so you can learn a lot about a plant by tasting it. And you can taste it. If it's bitter, then it's going to be bile-producing. If it's sweet, it's going to be nourishing. If it's sour or salty, it's going to have these other properties. And so you can learn a lot just from tasting. And then we've also worked on attuning ourselves to be more sensitive so that we can feel how these plants affect us. Mm-hmm. Which the flip side of that is I can't drink coffee because I could feel the effects of coffee by smelling it or having one drop. But it's a great benefit for learning about the plants. I can sit next to a plant and start to tell you what it could be used for.
Okay, we've had two calls of people that want some information. One is an older woman in her late 80s who wanted to know what herbs would be good for an irregular heartbeat. And
so I will say hawthorn. Hawthorn is the best heart herb. It's generally very safe. The only contraindication is if you're on heart medication, it may make your heart medication work better. So like I was talking about with blood thinners
you might have to reduce one or the other.
You have to be monitoring while you're taking the hawthorn and working with your doctor to
berry,
reduce your...
The leaf,
The berry or the flower are both very good.
Okay. So, and that could be a tincture?
Yeah, I do a tincture from the flowers and then a tea from the berries, and they're both very strong and good.
Okay, then we have another one. Prozac versus St. John's wort.
That's the question. Well, I haven't tried Prozac. I've tried Zoloft. It worked great to get me out of my funk, and then I was good. But St. John's wort can be great, and it's not the only herb for depression or for any sort of anxiety. It's really great for a kind of seasonal affective disorder sort of thing, because it actually makes you more receptive to sunlight and vitamin D. And so it's great for that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And these kind of...
But there are other plants that...
Yeah, there are a lot of other plants. And so when I'm working with someone who has anxiety or depression, a lot of times they've already tried St. John's wort and it didn't work. And so I'll look at some other factors, and I have lots of things that I don't even think of as, you know, anti-anxiety, but it's just a plant that's extremely grounding. And so it will help someone be more grounded. Or I'll look at the issue that they're having trouble relating to someone. And so I'll give them a plant that's good for helping facilitate good relationships, that sort of thing.
That sounds great. All right. Well, so people just need to look around and see what's available. There's been quite a bit of money put into St. John's wort research, and it's found to be pretty effective for mild to moderate depression and not nearly as effective for severe depression. So
yeah,
that's according to, you know, double-blind, placebo-controlled, high-standard scientific studies. All right, so we've got just a few minutes left, and I want to hear you sing. And now, how does singing relate to herbs?
Okay, so one of the ways that I work with plants is not just on a medicinal level, but on a spiritual level. And one of the things that I do for the plants and do for my clients is I sing. And so I sing these songs for a couple of reasons. They honor the plants, which is really important to have a reciprocal relationship with the plants. They also teach me about the plants because these songs come to me. I didn't decide to start singing about plants. This is like something I just suddenly opened my mouth and was singing a song that I is way more powerful than anything that Brooke Dooling normally would do. And then I also use them in healing sessions with individuals to heal through resonance, because I don't know if this will show up on the radio waves, but it is, there's a lot of vibration in sound, and it can mm-hmm. penetrate the body.
Totally.
And change the frequency.
That's why when people hear beautiful singing, they frequently cry.
Yes.
It has a powerful effect. All right. So we're going to hear some.
Okay. This is a song for the shore pine, which grows out by the coast. And it's very grounded, but also moving like the trees. Like the bird that flies, like the bird that soars, I will find my flight. House, through the rain that pours, I will stand my ground on this ocean shore.
Wow, that was great. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah, that's just, they're all different because the plants are so different. But
yeah, that sounded like some awesome country. I don't know. I was thinking of somebody very, that's very powerful. That's really cool. And so each, the songs just come to you?
Well, it's variable. Once I realized that these songs were something not normal, and that I didn't realize until I sang one in front of someone. I was like, oh, wow, that's something special. And so now I try and write songs for the plants. Every week I do a plant meditation on Tuesday nights at Lotus Yoga Studio, and I try to always have a song because it really helps people come into
meditation.
So this
is a class?
It's a class. It's a meditation class to learn about plants. It's learning how to connect with plants on this spiritual plane.
Okay. Now, give contact information if people want to contact you outside of at the radio station.
Great. So my contact information is Brooke Dooling. My email is baduling@gmail.com. My phone number is 503-791-4624. And I can be found always on Tuesday nights at 7:30 p.m. at Lotus Yoga Studio teaching these plant meditations. Your first class is always free and is $5 after that.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Brooke.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on the radio. Yeah, this is so fun.
It's been a blast. You have been listening to Your Health. Next week, Digging the Dirt returns, and Linda Brim and I think Betsy Ayers will be here, and we'll be talking about whatever you can do in your garden. Maybe you can even grow some plants for medicinal purposes. I'm Ann Goldine.